Okay. So I want to start. I'm talking tonight about working with emotions. And I want to start with reading a little story from Tara Brach's book, Radical Acceptance. Mohini was a regal white tiger who lived for many years in the Washington, D.C. National Zoo. For most of those years, her home was in the old lion house, a typical 12 by 12 foot cage with iron bars and a cement floor. Mohini spent her days pacing relentlessly back and forth in her cramped quarters. Eventually, biologists and staff worked together to create a natural habitat for her. Covering several acres, it had hills, trees, a pond, and a variety of vegetation. With excitement and anticipation, they released Mohini into her new and expansive environment. But it was too late. The tiger immediately sought refuge in a corner of the compound, where she lived for the remainder of her life. Mohini paced and paced in that corner until an area 12 by 12 feet was worn bare of grass. So, it can be said, the way we as beings can be limited by our conditioning, as Mohini was. And one of the main ways we stay inside our own little 12 by 12 area is because we don't want to experience any difficult states, difficult emotions. And so we have many difficulties in life. There might be situations we feel are unjust and unfair. We might be very upset by what's happening politically right now. And whatever's happening in our experience, and this is not in any way to deny the outer reality, but it's to understand that the inner reality is what is most troubling to us. Because the outer reality can change. Circumstances change. You know, you have a difficult interaction with somebody, and that changes. The inner is what we're always carrying around. It's always with us. Your mind and your heart is always with you. And so we need to absolutely address injustice, inequity, racism, sexism, transism, genderism, all of these things, absolutely. So I don't want to in any way deny this. I do want to just talk tonight about what we need to do to live inside our own home. You know, the home of our heart is the closest thing to us. And the outer circumstances need to be addressed. And they're not as close to home as our heart. Our heart is our home. And so really, not to oversimplify, but a lot of the difficulty in life is the difficult feelings we have. So if we can make peace with our difficult emotions, we can make peace with our difficult life. And that's what the talk's about. And so we've kind of moved from working with the breath, working with the body, and then being in our senses outdoors. And we're heading now towards working with emotions, and tomorrow we'll start meditating with our emotional lives. But tonight I just want to kind of lay the groundwork. And so I have the difficult job because my job is to talk about the tough stuff tonight and how to work with it. Tori gets to talk about, you know, the pleasant stuff, the way nature can deeply inspire us tomorrow night. But really, actually, both are extremely important for our freedom. It's not enough to wallow around in our difficult stuff because we get, you know, discouraged. But if we only sort of are going for the positive all the time, we're ignoring a big chunk of our experience. So as Tori has guided us, when we do the bow, we're taking the good and the bad, the difficult and the easy, to acknowledge that we have this capability to be much freer and much fuller than we often are. So emotions are, I mean, in a way, it's such a deep part of our experience, it's sort of flip to just say, oh, well, emotions, like it's some, almost like a little, like one of those delicious little nut balls that are on the table, right? Oh, emotions, yeah, we can kind of just toss it around like a little ball. So it's interesting the way language works. It can make very trivial things that are not trivial at all. I mean, emotions are really like the primary driving force of our heart. Our emotions organize us. If you know, in studies have shown that people who are cut off from emotional parts of the brain can't make decisions. Rational decisions can't get made if they're not informed by our emotional brain, our emotional heart. Emotions really give meaning, drive, passion to our lives. They organize our experience. It's what allows us to be so connected to others. It's what allows us to be so passionate about our way of caring for the world and all the problems. So it's very non-trivial to focus on emotions. In our experiential practice of mindfulness, we contact emotions and we usually see they can have components. So any emotional experience generally is going to have some thought involved. If it's strong enough, it often has a physical sensation or sensations that are part of it. So there's thought and there's sensation. There can be kind of a mood or coloring of the mind that would be hard to pinpoint in the body, sort of like an energy or a mood. So that's another component. And again, because some of you have already spoke to this, you don't always feel sensations with emotions. So again, I'm not casting this in a hard place. I mean, in a hard way, as some, it has to be this. But again, this is very oversimplified, but we might say that emotions are thoughts that are charged enough to be felt in the body. If you're oriented that way, not everybody is. So, and we have really pleasant emotions, we have really unpleasant emotions. There's maybe some neutral kind of emotions, maybe. But usually, we're pretty heavily going one way or the other, pleasant or unpleasant. If we want to be free in our hearts, we need to be free with our emotions, free inside our emotions, because there's no way it's ever going to stop. We are emotional beings. We're thinking beings. We don't want to stop thinking. We don't want to stop our emotions. All we're really wanting to do is become bigger than them. So that analogy of the room overstuffed with furniture. We're not trying to get rid of any furniture. We're just making the room bigger. We're becoming bigger than these experiences that afflict us. We become bigger even than the positive or pleasant emotions, because if we don't, then we get very attached to those. And then eventually we suffer from that. So we want to be bigger, but this doesn't mean somehow distant. We actually wake up inside our emotions. We find space inside our experience. That's where the bigness happens. And we do it through our practice of mindfulness. So this is when we can work with our emotions, this is where we kind of start to taste the fruit of practice most immediately and directly. It's also the most challenging thing in our practice. Because if we say that emotions are thoughts that are strongly charged, that charge has a magnetic force to it that pulls us into identification with the thoughts that are involved in any particular emotion. So when you're angry, it's pretty delicious. Our thoughts, when we're really, we know we're right, and we can feel very kind of almost pleasure in how right we are, even in the midst of an unpleasant experience. We love being right. And we get very identified with the thoughts. And by identified, what I really mean is thoughts are happening and we don't know they're happening. We're actually, it's like being in a dream where you don't know you're dreaming. You actually think it's really happening. And only once you wake up from the dream do you realize, oh, it was a dream. We're doing that all the time when we identify with thoughts. We are literally losing awareness that there's a thought world happening. It isn't the real world. You know? If you think right now about the afternoon hike, it isn't the afternoon hike. It's only existing anymore as a thought in your head. And this extremely simple statement, the thought world you're in is not the real world, is a profound wisdom when you really internalize that. To do that, we need to break the identification with thought. To just simply know it's happening. When we know our thoughts are happening, then we're not enmeshed. We actually have some space from which we can make a choice. So there's tremendous payoff to working with emotions. And there's also deep challenge, because it's when we get most identified with our thoughts, when we're most likely not to know that we're in a thought world, not the real world. So we need to have some tools to know how to do this. And so I want to talk about some of that tonight. So how do we work with our emotions? How can we wake up to them and not be so driven by them? So we have the advantage of being in this beautiful place. So the first way is to ask nature for help. When you're feeling sad or scared or mad, and you're just not sure what to do, just ask the trees, the ground, the rocks, animals, ask for help. And there's a quality where you can even almost give away your difficult state to the earth, because the earth can accept all of it. And you can feel your heart connecting with the earth. And you can just say, help me, please. I don't feel strong enough in this moment to really bear this. So help me. It feels really good to ask, to humble yourself enough to ask. So we can use nature by asking. And that's kind of please. Please help. We can also use nature, sounds funny to say, connect with nature is a better way to say it, by saying thank you. So use nature, connect with nature to gladden your heart. Thank nature for the little gifts. When we were doing the guided meditation yesterday and I was guiding us and focusing on color, there was a little aspen tree in front of me. I didn't realize this about aspen trees, but the stems of the leaves, I'm a former wildlife biologist. I was in the woods of New England for 20 years, you know, learning all about it and studying it. And I never saw that aspen leaves have a little pink stem. And so I just saw this little pink stem just in this incredible pattern in the little aspen tree. I just clued into it. Wow, that's something. Mm. And that just comes because we're willing to meet nature halfway. We're willing to slow down enough to be in our senses. And then the natural world has so much to offer that gladdens our heart. It's so simple and easy. One of you mentioned in group today how excited you were yesterday afternoon when Tori was having you just relate to one thing. And one of you got really excited about a lichen on a rock. That's how our heart can be. Well, I used to work with kids, young kids in the natural world in Massachusetts for the Audubon Society. And I love being with young kids, five-year-olds, because you could take them out and they just be, they start to jump up and down. A hole! A hole! A hole! And once we were watching a little hole in the ground, we got very quiet around it. It was about the size of a golf ball. And we knew it was a chipmunk hole. And we had seen a chipmunk go into this hole, so we snuck up. These are maybe eight-year-olds. We snuck up and we just formed a little circle and we stopped and we waited. The kids were, you know, patient long enough. We waited and suddenly this little, almost like a little pipe, fuzzy pipe cleaner, like came out of the hole. And then the whole chipmunk came out, but it came out backwards. And we were just like, we were so amazed that a little chipmunk would actually come backwards out its hole. And the kids were just so happy. I was so happy. Another time we were watching like 17 painted turtles on a log. And number 18 wanted to get on. And we were just on the banks of a little pond. And the little 18 started to get on the hole. It just started going like this. And 17 turtles are starting to chill. They're still trying to be chill, but they're trying to hold on. Finally, number 18 just topples the whole log, and all of them went into the pond. So kids are great for this, right? Kids are great for getting us, you know, out of our minds and, you know, as Jon Kabat-Zinn said, come to your senses, right? Come out of your mind and come to your senses. And our practice can do that. So we need nature this way too. We need to really slow down and look at as we're all doing together. So this really helps a lot with our tough stuff. So this is our first way, is to really say please. Outside, ask for help, and help is available. Help is on the way out there. And say thank you. Just be grateful for the little pink aspen leaf stems, or that you saw a chipmunk, you know, come backwards out of a hole. So nature's kind of one way we're working with our emotional life. Our second way is mindfulness. And something that people don't usually think about when they think about meditation is that meditation is relationship. Mindfulness is relationship. What we're actually doing here is not kicking out furniture out of the room. What we're actually doing by making the room bigger, by being bigger than the experience, we're changing our relationship with the experience. That's what we're changing. You don't need to change your experience if you can change your relationship with it. So we're doing relational practice. And if you don't believe me, science proves it. As if we need science to prove what we already know intuitively. But science has actually discovered, neuroscience, that mindfulness uses the social circuitry of the brain. When we're really well attuned with somebody, we're using the same circuitry of the brain that mindfulness is using. And that's why we say love is attention, right? Attention is love. It's the same part of your brain. So when you're being mindful alone, sitting in a room, you're being social with yourself. You're relating to your experience. It's relationship. And that's what we're focusing on. And we know the essence of relationship is friendship, friendliness. Here's a little story from the New York Times from 2009 titled, What Are Friends For? Last year, researchers studied 34 students at the University of Virginia, taking them to the base of a steep hill and fitting them with a weighted backpack. College freshmen, you know, they're of all psychological studies, it has college freshmen doing something. So in this case, picture a bunch of college freshmen standing in front of a hill with a weighted backpack. They were then asked to estimate the steepness of the hill. Some participants stood next to friends during the exercise while others were alone. The students who stood with friends gave lower estimates of the steepness of the hill. And the longer the friends had known each other, the less steep the hill appeared. Isn't that amazing? That our need to relate is so powerful that it directly affects our physical perception of how steep is a hill. It just looks less steep when you have a friend. So we're relational beings. In relationship, everything seems possible, more possible anyway. And so, of course, we want to be practicing wise relationship, helpful relationship. I remember a cartoon, remember the Sylvia cartoon, Nicole Hollander, pretty popular back in the 80s? Yes, no? No, wow, I'm impressed. Do you remember? Oh, very popular, very popular. Kind of feminist, but not that popular. I can't believe it. It was kind of like a feminist cartoon, and it was about this woman, Sylvia, and there's a lot of pets involved. And one cartoon is Sylvia has come back from work, and she's in kind of her power outfit, and you know, she's got her briefcase, and the dog and the cat are there. And so Sylvia's bubble has said, "Oh, I had the worst day at work today. My boss was so mad at me because I was late." And so there's a little golden retriever sitting there, and it's got the little thought bubble, and the golden retriever saying, "It was my fault. We were just playing stick, and I was way too enthusiastic and I made her late. And then there's a little cat sitting on the couch and the little cat bubble says, please don't share. So I'm a cat lover. My cat is not like that. But these are the two sort of poles of not quite doing relationship as skillfully as it can be. The dog is definitely like the epitome of codependence. It's all my fault, right? The cat is just whatever, whatever, like, you know, don't share. So the two poles that don't work. You know you're codependent if you fall off a cliff and someone else's life flashes before your eyes. So that's not what we're talking about. Neither golden retriever, neither like aloof cat. What we're doing is connecting without being implicated by the experience. We're connected but not swept away. The cat is disconnected, the dog is totally swept away, right? So we want to be in this middle place of deeply connecting with what is, but not being overwhelmed and not being swept away. And so how we do this is a real trick. And a wonderful Dharma teacher, Michelle McDonald, who teaches at Vallecitos, not sure if she taught this summer, but she's taught here for a gazillion years. She developed a technique. I'm pretty sure she did. I've always heard this. So I hope I'm being right here, Michelle, and describing it to you. She developed a little simple approach for how to be mindful with emotions called RAIN. And how many of you have heard of the RAIN approach before? Okay, quite a few hands. So do you remember what the R stands for?
Recognize.
Recognize, right? So this is huge. To begin to have a relationship with an emotion, you have to shake its hand. You have to know it's here. So recognize is first, of course. Recognize. Recognize fear, anger, jealousy, irritation, boredom, restlessness. Wow, what a menu. So this we can do, though. If we don't know it's happening, then it's running the show. So to recognize is the birth of relationship. You're now in relationship with your experience, using that social circuitry, keeping yourself company as you yourself are having a hard time. So recognize. And so A is next. What does A stand for? We might say acknowledge is sort of like recognize. So this is a little bit going a little bit deeper with it, and accept or allow is the A. You cannot be mindful of what you are not accepting. To be mindful of something, you have to open to it. You have to allow it. So there's no mindfulness without acceptance. And accepting is really good. But I think we have to go farther. Our acceptance has to blossom into just full-on kindness. We really can't do this path without kindness. As you're learning, if you're new to retreat, or if you're experienced, you've been on retreat before, this is a practice that just kind of confronts us with what's going on inside. It kind of hands you, we can call this practice of undefended presence. We're taking away all of our thought strategies for managing our mind. and just opening the lid, so to speak. We're not doing it on purpose. We're just sitting here, being with the breath, or being with the body, or being with sight or sound. But just the very act of sort of dropping into being, as we're doing, is sort of taking off the lid. And so stuff comes up. And the only way you can deal with anything that comes up in your psyche is to be friendly. Because who else knows your experience but you? Who knows what it feels like in your body? Only you. You can talk about it, but nobody knows what it's really like but you. Nobody knows what it's really like when you're feeling a tough state. Only you know. So you're the one that, you're the friend that is needed. We can't do it any other way. So this path has kind of a warrior quality to it. It takes courage to sit and not be distracted because stuff comes up. Don't look for it. You don't have, you know, it'll just come. So it takes courage. But the other quality of true warriorship, Trungpa Rinpoche liked to talk about warriorship, the other quality besides bravery, which people don't often think about, is kindness, tenderness. That's just as important as courage when we work with our hearts. And to be kind to our experience, you know, we hear all this, well, I need to love myself more. What does that actually mean? In your actual experience, what it means is being kind to this moment of your experience. That's how to love yourself. The only way. There isn't some big abstract loving yourself. What are you doing is you're actually loving what is in your heart. And Pema Chodron has this to say about loving ourselves. When people start to meditate or to work with any kind of spiritual discipline, they often think that somehow they're going to improve, which is a sort of subtle aggression against who they really are. It's a bit like saying, if I jog, I'll be a much better person. Where Tori and I live, that is really true. People run in Boulder like crazy for decades now. And in fact, the 16th Karmapa, when he came to Boulder, Tibetan teacher who's, you know, grew up in old Tibet, he saw all these people running around. He said, where are they all going? So if I jog, I'll be a much better person. If I could only get a nicer house, I'd be a better person. If I could meditate and calm down, I'd be a better person. But loving kindness, Maitri, towards ourselves doesn't mean getting rid of anything. Maitri means that we can still be crazy after all these years. We can still be angry after all these years. We can still be timid or jealous or full of feelings of unworthiness. The point is not to try to change ourselves. Practice isn't about trying to throw ourselves away and become something better. It's about befriending who we are already. The ground of practice is you or me or whoever we are right now, just as we are. What a relief. You can just kind of, I'm going to say this with a sense of humor, you can just sort of be the neurotic mess you are. Myself included, Tori included.
No.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. Tori was at another level. You just get to give yourself a break. It is so much easier to just be okay with the fact that you get anxious than to try to not get anxious. What a struggle. And the beauty is you don't have to make any of these states go away to be mindful. All you need to do is wake up and be mindful inside of them. And the minute we befriend our experience, bring a kind of warmth or hospitality to what is, something happens. I feel like our experience gets more, what's the word? I don't want to say it tames, but maybe that's the word. When we accept the thing we don't want to accept, that thing tames. It's not nearly the dragon we thought it was. We think it's a dragon because we're not willing to actually look at it. When we look at it, often instead of it being a big saber-toothed tiger, it can be a kitten. Not always, but often. And so I remember I was doing a long retreat once where I was focusing a lot on loving kindness practice, and where you just repeat kind wishes for yourself and others again and again, and it softens the heart. And I just had this little insight. It was just so sweet. I just had this thought, everything is arising to find a friend. Everything in your heart is arising to find a friend. And if the friendliness is extended, the handshake with your experience, maybe even the hug, that experience becomes much more manageable. It's when we resist it that it actually becomes more scary. Persia Galter wrote this poem. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no. To my life, all the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, those coded messages that sent me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart, and I say, holy, holy, holy. This is acceptance, kindness, friendliness. And the more we accept, the more sense of humor we have. Sense of humor is a lovely reflection of our acceptance, and it also creates more acceptance. So I always like to throw in humor. And let's be really accepting about our very strange tradition. Everything's strange. Our tradition is strange. Sitting here silently, having intense emotions, but looking like this. I'm so angry. I'm so sad. Right? It's a little strange. Being in silence in a group, a little strange. So let's just poke fun a little bit, take ourselves lightly. Here's the first day of Zen Garden School. I'll pass this around. And there's a monk with his head in his hands. He's just aghast at what all the newbie monks in the sandpit are doing. One monk is building a sandcastle. One monk has stepped on a rake and hit himself in the head with it. One monk is doing snow angels in the sandpit. It's just kind of a funny picture. I don't know. Do you believe in reincarnation? It's part of our tradition. Here's a pile of ashes on a cloud with wings on the ashes, talking to an angel also with wings. And the pile of ashes is saying, if I had it to do over again, I definitely wouldn't have been cremated. Two Zen practitioners, one saying to the other, they're in full lotus, I never liked his stillness. A man and a woman in a little pickle. The guy's full lotus on the living room floor, and the gal is saying, "Can you be in the moment later?" And this is poking fun of us in Boulder. One duck is asking the other duck, "Maybe you should ask yourself why you're inviting all this duck hunting into your life." So, we can be light. So accept, we can accept our experience. When we really accept it more, we're kind and friendly. And when we really accept, we lighten up. We have a sense of humor. So the I in RAIN, what does the I stand for? Investigate. Maybe not the best word, because when people think investigate, they think, "Oh, I'm going to really figure this out. Oh, okay, let me see here. For breakfast I had this scrambled eggs, and I only ate the strawberries and the mixed fruit, and then I had a really good sit, so I'm going to definitely do that tomorrow," right? That's not really what we mean by investigate. Investigate really means to experience, but R-A-E-N just isn't so catchy. Maybe if you live in Scotland, or Rhine. Anyway, so E, I start, really, investigate means experience. It means doing what we're already doing, which is feeling what's happening in the body primarily. I'll harp on this tomorrow. The best place to do your investigation when the tough stuff is here is to feel sensation. Because an emotion is creating a whole narrative of you in the past or the future. It's very time bound. When we drop into the body and sensation, it's in the present moment. So if you're scared, what time frame are you in when you feel fear? Exactly. We're almost always in the future. We're imagining something that's going to happen, and it's not pretty. So fear has future in it. When we're angry, what time frame do we tend to be in? The past. Anger is thinking about the past, and it's not pretty. That's one version. There's other versions. So our emotions are bound in time. When we drop into the body, we drop out of time and into sensation. Buzz, pulse, throb, tingle. That's a present moment experience. So you've recognized the emotion, you've allowed the emotion, maybe even made friends with it a little bit, feel at least friendly enough to let it continue. Then we investigate and we drop into the body. And as I said this morning, if you can't find an obvious physical expression in the body of anger, then just feel the breath. Because you want to be in your body no matter what, because that's the present moment. The thoughts are what create time. So be with anger. You might be feeling heat. You might be feeling prickle. You might be feeling clenching. You want to get very interested in the physical experience. Once on retreat, I was the lunch dishwasher, and a yogi had the incredible chutzpah to be washing the tea balls. This is at IMS, right when I was supposed to be in there washing the lunch dishes, and I had a very intense job, and I felt very important. And I saw him in there, and I just felt pissed. And so I just stopped, and I just felt anger, and it was heat. I mean, this was pretty strong anger. It was heat, it was prickle, it was just this burning. And I just stayed with burning, 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 heat, prickle, prickle. Oh, what a jerk. Yep, thank you. Thanks for the thought. Then I come back. Burn, prickle. Oh, how inconsiderate. Oh, thank you, thank you. Come back. Burn, burn. And then it all sort of, now this is because I was been in retreat for a while. Suddenly it just vanished. Poof. And I was done. The emotion had gotten metabolized because I wasn't getting swept away. The story happened, but I kept acknowledging it and just coming back. And then it was like, it was just sort of a silly mistake. The guy just didn't really know that that was my time. And so I went in there and just said, I'm really sorry, but I have to use this sink. He's like, oh yeah. And I said, there's another sink around the corner. No problem, right? So all I did was ground in sensation. And this is the three secrets of working with emotion is or are sensation, sensation, sensation. Okay? So it's very odd to get really curious about, let's say you're sad and there's tears, and it's very odd to wake up inside sadness and feel clenching in the throat, maybe the wetness of tears, maybe it's heaving in the chest. But it's so grounding to do it. You're having that experience anyway, so why not wake up with the sensations of it? So it pulls us into the present. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's grounding. All the drama is in your thoughts. Buzz, throb, tingle. Where's the drama? You're scared and you feel flutter in the belly. Flutter, flutter, flutter. There's no drama. You can really become as you notice flutter. So we ground in the body, we investigate in the body. So we investigate by feeling the experience in the body. We acknowledge the thoughts, but we park our attention in the physical. And then what's really important to do is notice everywhere in the body you're not feeling that experience that isn't expressing anger or something. So you go and you feel, oh, the legs. There's no anger in the legs. There's no heat or prickliness in the legs. The prickliness is up here. And even if I go to my back, there's not heat or prickliness. Right? So we feel everywhere the experience isn't in the body. And that leads to a very interesting truth. If you're feeling fear and there's tingling in the belly, does it actually, I'm sorry, there's tingling in the belly, but the legs are fine, the arms are fine, the back is fine, the head is fine. Does it make sense to say, I'm scared? I am scared. That's the language of total identification. It's not that there's a fear experience you're having, it's that you are the fear. But your experience directly contradicts that. Your experience shows you that the body is activated in the belly. The rest of the body is not activated. So the sentence, I am scared, does not accord with your experience. So this leads to the N of rain. What's the N? Non-identification. Don't worry if you don't know it. A lot of people don't. Some people do. This is non-identification. When you see that I'm not scared, there is flutter here, and there are thoughts of the future, that's you not being identified. That's you actually having a relationship with your experience. You're actually seeing, oh, it's like this. There's flutter here, and there's future thoughts that are unpleasant up here. You are in relationship, and you're not identified. Does that make sense? This is the hardest piece for people to get, the non-identification.
Say more about it.
Pardon?
Say more about it.
Where's the question coming from? What are you curious about? Because I want to make sure to address what you're wondering.
When you say non-identification, yeah. Is it that I'm not identifying with the thought, or I'm not identifying with the feelings, or both of them?
Both.
So both. I have them, I know I have them, but I'm not identifying with them.
Exactly. Because if you, first of all, you're noticing that only part of you is activated in fear, right, in the body. Rest of the body's fine, right? So that's the first thing. The second thing is that if you're noticing the experience, that too is non-fear. Mindfulness is not fear. So it just doesn't make sense to say, I'm scared. The languaging that tracks your experience better would be something like, there is fear, or fear is known, or just flutter and future thinking. That actually tracks your experience. So I'll stop with that and just see. Again, we'll be doing this practice tomorrow. I just wanted to introduce it. But it's fine if you have questions or comments, please. Please.
So I read a very
is it Kim?
Article. Yeah. Kim. It was written by a Tibetan Buddhist monk, and he was talking about how Americans, we grew up with really strong identification with emotions because of our language, like, I am scared.
Yes.
And his point was, like, in Spanish, the equivalent translates to, I have fear, I have it. And
yeah.
But in our culture, we say, fear is present.
Nice.
And sometimes I've done that for myself, and it's really nice, that non-identification, just shift the language.
Great, beautiful. Mm-hmm. Whatever language works, fear is present is really different, right? Mm-hmm. There is fear. Some people might say, a part of me is scared, mm-hmm. right? All of that is tracking your experience. Thank you. Please.
So, in real life, in real time, when you're in the middle of a heated moment or something is aggravating you, or it's like how long does it take of training to get to the point where in an instant you can go through four steps and be, you know, when you're relating with someone or, you know, you have children and you're trying to, like, okay, I got to take like 10 minutes, just check back with you in a minute, you know,
right.
Go through the steps,
right.
There's no time to do that.
Exactly. Right.
So that becomes a challenge in real life.
Like, exactly. It's essentially the worst time to take swimming lessons is when you've been tossed overboard. Right? So you want to be really good at your swimming lessons already. And then you get tossed overboard. And then you can swim. Right? So this is what we're doing. We are learning again and again. And it's great to work with mild, minor things. Irritation, I just don't, you know, quite like the fact that my tea water is not warm enough, right? Open to that. What's this little irritation like? Oh, it's like this. Use the rain with that. We'll do a lot of this tomorrow, but so we this is what we're doing. We're doing swimming lessons. You know, we call it practice. What's it practice for? It's practice for that when you're 7-year-old or your 11-year-old is have, you know, given you a hard time, or they're having a hard time, and you've got to be all the good things, right? So this is practice for that. So, and basically, the more you practice, the more it just happens spontaneously. It'll be more spontaneous when you're sitting more. You know, that's just total rule of thumb. So, being on retreat, this is great. Now we can really keep practicing this. The challenge is to keep practicing in life. So, yeah.
So you're saying that as Americans or in the Western world, we're more oriented towards this identification. And my question is, in traditional teachings, is this a part of traditional Buddhist teachings to
Rain?
Buddhists? Yeah, like in, let's say we were in Tibet.
There's tremendous wisdom in Tibet, you know, Thailand, Theravada countries, in working with emotions. Tremendous wisdom. The Rain approach, I think, is probably developed a little more specifically for the Western heart, but I don't see why it wouldn't be totally applicable to the Tibetan heart as well.
I will say that there is a much greater in the West. There's a much greater psychological aspect of Buddhism than in other cultures, especially in Tibet and in Southeast Asia. That there's a way that it's worked with emotions, but it's not so much from a psychological, but it's more from like a traditional way that we're being aware of emotions. That awareness of emotions is very much really, really important all the way across the board. It's the psychological way that we're relating to it that is very different for the West.
And what Tibetan teachers, sort of the younger teachers who are teaching in this country and living in this country, they've learned that they need to really start focusing on working with emotions, because it's just something we do more, you know. Yeah, the psychological side of it.
Yeah, I was just curious about that, because so much of, I think, what you're speaking to having a background in psychology as well, and a little bit of knowledge of Buddhism, is like, you know, where is the overlap here? And knowing that Buddhists aren't oriented towards the world the way that we are. So it's like just interesting to try to make sense of that.
Sure. Time for one more, if there is one. Okay, let's sit for just a minute.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.